Hi, everyone, and welcome to another Talk to Motive Automotive Aftermarket Platform podcast by Paul Marinelli. A pleasure to have you with us, coming to you from Melbourne, Australia. Today, we're joined by the Australian Auto Parts Manufacturing and Export Council Chairman and DACO, Southeast Asia Vice President and Australia New Zealand Managing Director Aftermarket, Arnold Mao. So he wears quite a few hats, and he's going to talk to us about some exciting new developments in the Australian automotive aftermarket industry and the Australian manufacturing industry in general, and about the DACO aftermarket story over the pandemic and beyond. Arnold, welcome.
Thanks, Paul. I'm glad to be on your podcast.
Thanks. Nice to have you with us. You're my first ever guest, so I'm delighted that it could be you, mate.
I feel very proud. Thank you.
And so you should. We've got some very, very good news to talk about, given the National Reconstruction Fund. This is the first thing I wanted to talk to you about, signalling some new confidence in Australia's automotive industry. This is a fund of something like $15 billion from the Australian government being put towards transport manufacturing and supply chains for cars, trains and shipbuilding, etc. Of course, given that we stopped building cars in Australia back in 2017. So really, the aftermarket is our car industry. So this $15 billion manufacturing fund supplied by the government must be a good thing for Australian manufacturing, particularly in the auto aftermarket.
Absolutely, Paul. And out of that $15 billion, there's $5 billion which will be available from its commencement. So it's a big investment by the government. And I think it also justifies the decision of how important it is overall in our industry. I mean, more than 16% of the aftermarket manufacturers that are actively involved in Australia are exporting products. I think it equates to roughly $640 million in combined export revenue. It is down a bit since 2015, but that's probably due to the COVID years. So they do expect, most companies do expect to grow that business. And I would imagine that with, $5 billion out of $15 billion available from commencement to be able to support businesses in the export market, I would see a large uptake, I believe, from many of the current players in the market. You know, the key markets for our exports in automotive are the US, followed by Europe and New Zealand, and the Middle East. And there's certainly a trend that most people, something like more than 80%, are showing that their exports will increase over the next 3 years.
It's very exciting, isn't it? Because for many years, I think people thought, particularly here in Australia, but even perhaps a global view of our country, was that our car manufacturing was pretty much it. And once that stopped, there wasn't much more that we were doing. But in fact, even while cars were being built in Australia, there were lots of automotive aftermarket component manufacturers, designers, etc., here in this country, but were struggling to have the investment to do the kinds of things they needed to do to compete on a global stage.
Absolutely. I mean, even today, you know, you have aftermarket manufacturers or manufacturers that are supplying OEs to Toyota, for instance, on ball bars and tow bars. And, you know, that's been going on for many, many years. And I think most people tend to think of the OE manufacturers as making everything. But the issue really is that generally they assemble cars, and a lot of the components are manufactured by many manufacturers throughout the world. And there are many in Australia that were heavily involved in both Ford, Mitsubishi, Toyota, and of course Holden, who are now looking at other opportunities, or have been, and continue to export to many locations around the world. I think something like 70% are now exporting to overseas markets.
Yeah, incredible stuff. And also, when we look at EVs and what's going on in that space and the rate of development, this does open the door, this new development fund or manufacturing fund, for companies here to get into that EV playground, and particularly in the aftermarket side of things, of increasing efficiencies for EVs, battery technologies, charging technologies, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the Automotive Aftermarket Association is heavily involved with the Innovation Centre, and also looking at training measures that are going to be required for people to deal with EVs. I mean, it's a more dangerous repair and maintenance. So there has to be specialty training, specialty tools. You are talking about high voltage. But again, I would imagine that this manufacturing fund will be able to help a lot of companies facilitate this, because I'm sure it's also an expensive process to get accredited and have the right equipment.
And you were saying, you were talking about companies or companies in Australia that are exporting components, designing, building, making components. Of course, Daco, not an Australian company, but you've had an Australian presence for decades. You're one of the veterans of the auto aftermarket and OE chain here in Australia. But Daco itself is also doing the same. You also manufacture in rural Australia and export around the world. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. I mean, Daco initially was heavily involved in the Ford development of the Barra engine. And right up until its closure, Daco continued to be an OE supplier. But many years ago, I guess that the team in Daco Australia saw the opportunity to head down the aftermarket path. And of course, OE businesses started downsizing and some exited in the early days. And then, of course, the latter part was GM and Holden and then Ford as well. But Daco, globally, we're an OE, obviously, but also strongly aligned to aftermarket. In Australia, we saw an opportunity in Wagga in rural New South Wales. There was a business called Precision Parts. Very talented bunch of people making harmonic balancers or dampers. And it was actually the first global acquisition for Daco where we specifically acquired a business for the aftermarket. So in September 2013, we acquired Precision Parts, and the name now is Daco Precision Holdings Proprietary Limited, and we accelerated our export of those components, which they had already been exporting to the US, but we then added Daco Europe to that export market. The challenges are still there, but the business is now been with us for just on 10 years. This year, actually, we'll celebrate 10 years. It has gone through some ups and downs. Right now, it seems pretty strong. But, you know, the costs that are now happening in all sorts of businesses in Australia are certainly tougher to deal with. But we're very confident about that business. It has been a great acquisition. And as I said, we have some really talented people. I think you would personally know we've done some development on some motorsport, the V8 supercars that we're doing some trials and testing with. And that's almost like a little bit of a side piece of business that we're developing as we continue to trade, etc. But they also make a very high level of performance dampers for modifications to performance type vehicles. Very good acquisition, great products, and a testament to the talent that is in Australia.
Yeah, very much so. And it must have been a proud moment for you the first time you went off to Apex in the US with displays there of those harmonic balancers made in Wagga, in a little town in New South Wales in Australia, in a country town, with this small but dedicated and extremely talented team of people selling on a global stage. It must have been a very proud moment for you.
Well, it is. And I think, you know, when you make acquisitions, as I'm sure a lot of people who listen to this, it's always, you know, what does the business look like in 4 or 5 years? Have you made the right investment? Is it a payback? And certainly our Wagga facility has paid itself back at least probably 6 to 10 multiples. So it was a great acquisition. And as I said, the products are well-respected. When you go to the US, as like you say, at Apex or PRI performance shows, it's actually the brand, Powerbond, that is actually even more recognized than Daco. So it's a great brand that we acquired. We still use the brand and we would not dilute that brand.
Very good. And let's talk about some other Australian companies. I mean, there are plenty of them, but I want to make the point in this podcast because I know many people in Europe and around the world listen to the Talk to Motive platform. PWR, Paul Wheel Racing, supplying at the Grand Prix, I bumped into Keyes Wheel. You know, I've known him for a long time as a team owner, but of course, as the owner and operator of PWR, they supply every Formula One team, every NASCAR team around the world. God knows what other things they're doing all over the planet from this relatively small factory in Currumbin on the Gold Coast. And then you have Red Arc as well, who are also doing the job all over the world, based in South Australia. Brown & Watson International. And of course, as we mentioned, even Daco. And there are others. There are many others that are out there, perhaps not making as much noise, but they might be able to now with some support from the government fund.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, you mentioned the companies there. I mean, Red Arc, I mean, probably one of the world's leaders. And I've been lucky enough to visit the plant in Adelaide, and it is second to none. And the talent of the Red Arc team is unbelievable when you look at the work they're doing with the defense industry, etc. You know, you mentioned other countries. I ran into Frank Hutchinson at Don Kite. There he is setting up in South America, in Peru. We're trying to, you know, I'm trying to introduce them to the Daco people in South America, see if there's some business we can do. there are many companies, as you mentioned, PWR. I mean, I don't think anybody would really understand the complexity and how good you have to be providing components to a Formula One car. And, you know, it's a testament, again, to the Australian manufacturing. And certainly, you know, the $5 billion and then ultimately $15 billion, I think it opens up lots of opportunities for other companies that maybe are currently domestically focused and to take some of their, their talent and export that.
Yeah, and I think what this has done, or the example these companies have set, as you would well know, for many years in Australia, there's almost been this attitude of, oh, it's too hard, it's too expensive, we could never compete. You know, try telling that to these companies. They're paying top wages to their people, top salaries. It's not as if they're skimping out on the manufacturing process. That costs them even more to do. But because it's quality, the customers are willing to pay for it. And I think this is the message we need to get across, that there is talent in this country. And with the right investment, the skills and the talent and the development can be world leaders. Why not?
Absolutely. And I think you mentioned that, you know, it is the high quality of products that Australia is renowned for. I mean, if you're making tow bars, I mean, these are critical pieces of equipment that go on a car. You know, if you're talking radiators like PWR for performance, I mean, those are all critical pieces of equipment that go on cars. And hence, no different than, you know, we make performance dampers, and they're almost handmade, if you like. And it's critical that Australia has to separate itself to be at the quality. And we'll never compete at the bottom, we know that. And I think it's a testament to all of these companies that they have the ability to focus on the top end and the quality parts. And, you know, and Australia is renowned for making quality parts. Yes, we're not the cheapest, but as I said, you know, these cars are expensive things, and people like to pay. People like to pay lots of money to make their car look better or perform better. And I think this fund will certainly maybe allow some of the second tier companies to explore investment in their businesses to make it more streamlined, to maybe lower some costs and therefore open up new markets like the Middle East, like South America, and expand further.
Yes, very much so. And interesting that you touched on performance as well. That seems to be a recurring theme in terms of aftermarket development, and the hunger or the market, the desire and the demand for increasing performance, whether it's in the aesthetic look of a car or in the actual horsepower a car is developing. It's amazing how there's always a market, no matter how expensive the cars are when you first buy them, for people who still want to customize and have that signature, if you like, of increased performance or some sort of exotic product that's put onto their car. That market just continues to grow.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look, we seem to copy the US, I think, a lot in Australia, where people like to, you know, increase the horsepower of their engines. And I think there's a close alignment to performance in the US and Australia. And obviously, you know, supercars with the V8 engines has always been something that has been associated with Australian motorsport. And it's still a racing category that today, with Mustang and Camaro, is something people enjoy. And I'm not so sure I'll ever enjoy watching an electric motor race, but because, you know, the thing about performance is it is about the noise. And I think Australia exports and is able to manufacture a lot of parts that suit particularly American muscle cars, but also the Japanese performance type cars. So I think we have a lot of flexibility. You know, people like Harrop are very heavily involved in Mustangs and obviously Herod Motorsport, that we have quite a close association with. I think it's a testament, again, that we cover, you know, not only did we have a car manufacturing industry, which has now, of course, disappeared, but we've been able to continue to take these previous suppliers and move into other areas.
Let's talk about a little bit more about Daco now. And something that I really admired watching your company get through was that whole pandemic period and how you dealt with it, how you took care of your customers, how business actually increased substantially as a result. Can you tell us about how your theory around how that all went for Daco? Because in Australia, as you well know, particularly here in Melbourne, where your head office and warehouse is based, we endured the longest lockdowns of anywhere in the world, and draconian rules and absolute stupidity looking back on it now. But you managed to get through that extremely strongly. Can you tell us about that process?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One is, you know, I mean, you live in Melbourne, I do. We were all heavily impacted. I think in the early days, we sort of looked at our revenue and said, you know, I think the government said 30%. So we sort of calculated what did that look like. March 17th, I think you and I were going to the Grand Prix when it got cancelled. And, you know, from then on, we sort of saw our business drop off about 5% and then a little more in April. And then from then on, it started seeing a significant uptick. At that same time, of course, Northern Italy was heavily affected, which is where we have a lot of our global plants. And we have 3 to 4 manufacturing plants in Northern Italy and a DC. And they had already implemented many safety protocols, which we copied straight into Australia and other parts of the world. And we really saw a need to isolate like we had to. We had administration working at home, but the DC, of course, couldn't work from home. So as our business picked up, we were struggling for labor. So all of us, including myself, got, you know, the high vis on and the safety boots, and we started supporting the distribution center. And we also did a lot of restructuring of the facility. But our business just kept growing, and particularly around performance. I think a lot of people were sitting at home, you know, let's go and repair the car. And we started seeing a trend, and that was we were going to run out of stock. And that was becoming quite evident as lead times, of course, globally were extending. We were shipping probably air freight roughly a 40 to 240 footers a month to keep up demand. And that was the right decision. It saw our business increase. We picked up some share, obviously, as other competitors didn't air freight. It cost a lot during that time, but it was the right decision. And our business has remained strong since that time. And as a matter of fact, we still struggle from some months to get the right number of headcount into the distribution center. But I think that the focus was on the customer. The focus was on ensuring that our on-time and fill rates were maintained. Our fill rates are normally around about 97-98%. Our low during the peak of COVID lockdown was 79-80%. And by late 2022, we managed to get that back to the high 90s again. And we've maintained that as supply chain comes back to some normality, although costs are still high. But I think the key to it all was to listen to the customer. I think everybody was under pressure, so I think you had to be more adaptable. We're lucky we have a very good, flexible team in the distribution center, and of course our sales and product guys who also spent many weeks. I mean, I think I spent probably close to a year in the distribution center. Made a lot of significant improvements with the team, which are helping us right now to continue to grow. But it was, in hindsight, I probably shouldn't say it this way, but in hindsight, it was actually fun, although the lockdown wasn't, but the actual work was fun. And we ended up creating a real good team atmosphere and a can-do attitude to continuing to supply our customers. And of course, there was a lot of ups and downs as the peak lockdown, the curfew time. I think the numbers I heard, there was up to 500,000 vehicles that had missed their regular logbook service. And then, of course, as the lockdown came off, boom, everybody had to get vehicles serviced. And, of course, miles driven were going up as public transport was not being used. So we were able to adapt. It wasn't easy at times, but it's a testament to people, I guess, that they are able to adapt, and they were flexible enough and to make it work, and putting the customer first. That was the priority. How do we service the customer? Because as we know, our industry is one, where no mechanic keeps any parts anymore. They expect within the next half hour, they've got the car on the hoist that has to be delivered. Mm-hmm. And that became a big challenge during COVID, of course, with, contactless delivery, et cetera. So it was an idea to adapt as quick as we could and give people flexibility to make it happen.
Well, Arnold, I think Daco is a shining example of how you really got that right, how you used the period to improve your business, how you used the period also to speak and communicate with your customers. So many of my clients did that, but there were plenty of others that didn't. It's almost like they completely shut down. And it was the wrong thing to do, because that was a rare time when you could actually have a lot of contact with your customers and to find out what you could do to improve your service, your products, whatever it was. And you were a shining example of how that was done right, as were a number of other companies during that time. But I must admit, there were plenty that really ballsed it up.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we were lucky that we got good lessons from our European organization. You know, our plants put lots of processes in place, which we copied. Like many companies, we got, you know, we had the health department walking here, and we got a very complimentary response to our strategy. Hindsight, would we have done things differently? I'd be honest, I don't think we would have. I think we would have done exactly what we did. The difference is, it wasn't hindsight. We had to make it up as we went along, as many companies did, of course.
Mm. And something I might raise from that point in time, it's bringing back memories of how awful some of that period was in terms of the global tragedy. But amongst all of that Daco was doing in Italy and Australia and all over the world, the Italians developed a ventilator design and put all the design drawings and stuff online free for anyone Correct. To take and manufacture. Tell us a bit about that, because that made global news.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it was the engineering team at Daco Italy. Obviously, you know, capacity was limited with, normally it's two shifts. They had to split the shifts significantly apart, so there was no contact between shift changes. And then I think the design and our engineering team came up with the solution for this ventilator and nozzle and so forth that obviously was a requirement from the Italian government. And I think that, you know, those things, even though they are intellectual property, I think it was great that they simply placed those drawings and instructions on how to manufacture on the open market and allowed other companies, because there's no way Daco on its own could have met the demand required. So I think that was a great application. And I think from memory, it was basically a sort of ventilated adaption that could be used in multiple applications.
Yes, it was a wonderfully positive thing, and it was great to see it picked up by AMN Global in the US and other news agencies around the world. What a fantastic gesture it was, and how many people it helped, no doubt. Now, we've gone through all of that, the pandemic side. Let's go back to the excitement of the future ahead. Daco will be exhibiting at an Australian, I wouldn't say trade show, but it's not. It's more a networking and training event called AutoCare in Brisbane, June 9 yep. and 10. Tell us about that event. It's run by the Australian Automotive Aftermarket Association. You've obviously got a significant involvement. Why would an international visitor in the industry consider going?
Well, I think AutoCare, you know, is based on the US company or the US model that they had. And this is different than, say, the Apex, where we tend to show a lot of new products. This is much more, as you say, networking. There's lots of conferences. There's lots of seminars and you know, guest speakers talking about trends in the industry and things that people can learn from. So it's a probably an interactive type exhibition show, and, you know, a learning center, I guess, is the best way to describe it. This is the second one that we've had, because obviously we had the 3 years of COVID. So I would encourage people to go there if you are looking at trends or you want to learn about anything from, you know, products through to differences around the world and what's happening in trends. And there's lots of international speakers. It's a convention offering, I guess, unprecedented training and networking opportunity.
And the best thing about it, it's not too big. It's a size that it's really manageable and easy to get around and speak to people. And while companies like Daco are on display, it's more training and service techniques, all that sort of thing, rather than, you know, a hard sell, isn't it?
Correct. It's you know, technical sessions, workshop management programs. So you've got the trade show, but really there's a technical training program. There's workshop management programs. You know, you can learn, you can network, and you can experience the trade shows. I would encourage people to go to the autocare.org.au site, and you can have a look at the technical programs. But lots of guest speakers, Stuart Charity, David Fraser from Capricorn, as you know, Wayne Bryan from GPC Asia.
And to get good management training is hard these days as well, which AutoCare is yeah. very good with.
Yeah, so I would encourage people to go to the website, and there's seminars and so forth that people could really get a lot out of.
Yeah, and that's autocare.org.au, org.au, June 9 and 10, 2023, the AutoCare event at the Brisbane Convention Centre. Well worth having a look at, whether you're in Australia or otherwise, if you're in town. And also, it's on a Friday and a Saturday, so if you've got a business week happening, you can actually tailor it to the end of that week and take care of your Saturday at the event too. So it's an exciting time coming up, Arnold, for the Australian Automotive Product Manufacturers and Exporters Council. It's APMEC, of which you are the chair. Very exciting time also for DACO Australia and DACO all around the world. I couldn't end our conversation without, you know, as listeners to my podcast would be used to, there's always something to do with motorsport in there somewhere. And heading to the end of our conversation, DACO's got a wonderful motorsport involvement, particularly in Australia, that's gone more than a decade now. Tell us about that involvement. Obviously, it involves supercars, Porsche Carrera Cup, Bathurst 6-Hour, GT. I mean, you cover so many different categories with that wonderful, huge logo, and it's become very well known now.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, the fun part is that we're in the automotive business, we're in the car business, so our customers like cars, obviously, and, you know, V8 supercars is fantastic, and the relationship really goes back to we sponsored, or have done and continue to sponsor David Russell, who's a great ambassador, and, you know, the nickname of DACO Dave is well known. And it's been a great partnership with him, not only in Porsche Carrera Cup, but obviously the Enduros, you know, very successful, finishing third 2 years ago at Bathurst and last year fourth with the Erebus team. Really, also on the Porsche Carrera Cup, which he's back into this year, and obviously finished third last year, which gives our brand a lot of recognition. And then 3 years ago, we decided to be on the Cool Drive car and had an opportunity through the Blanchard family to get a high visibility spot, and it's been just fantastic. And you know, we've been, I guess Kelly Brothers was the initial. We were on two cars, and then on Simona's car. That was a lot of fun. Then we moved to Cam Waters on Tickford for a couple of years. And, you know, we've continued to be involved. It's in the DNA of most of our customers to be involved in motorsport. You know, getting into the pits, spending time with the drivers. It's that adrenaline rush, you know, the noise. I mean, you and I have both been to different 12, 6 hours in Bathursts. And, you know, it's a fun time. And you can see the amount of commitment that GPC Asia Pacific have in you know, motor racing. Burson, Bapcor, also hip committed. Most of our, you know, top line people get involved in this sport, and it's really a direct relationship. We sell performance parts, as many of our customers and many of our competitors do, and I think it's a fun thing to be involved in, and it allows us to take customers and spend some quality time with them. You know, particularly seeing and looking at cars and events. I thoroughly enjoy it. It's sort of, you know, if you like cars, I guess that's why you're in this business.
I think the point really needs to be made that when you want to talk to the mechanics, to the technicians, you need to be in motorsport, without any doubt whatsoever. And it really does prove it, because particularly with DACO, I know there was a period of time where you had a bit of a freeze on in any of your print media advertising, and all that was there was the motorsport, yet your business kept increasing. So it must have been doing something right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we get the numbers from Bathurst, and I think when you look at what exposure our logo had at Bathurst, it's significant for the investment. And the good thing is Carrera Cup has done the same. They produce detail of what the brand's worth, and our customers are at the racetrack. I mean, they're there looking at cars, and so it's about our global logo, and I think we get a lot of recognition within DACO. I mean, a lot of the advertising around the world that they use in print media has happened to be a lot of the Australian images that that we export around the world. And it's good fun seeing it. And I think we'll continue to be involved. We've enjoyed it, and we'll continue to enjoy it.
Well, Arnold, what can I say? That's a fantastic roundup of everything that's been going on in our industry and the DACO success story to this date, and how you have done so well over many years in Australia.
79, I think, was when DACO first established itself in New South Wales.
Well, there you go.
Supplying mainly OE componentry at that time to auto hose and so forth.
Yeah, 79. Definitely a veteran of the automotive aftermarket in Australia. So thank you so much to DACO Southeast Asia Vice President and Australia New Zealand Managing Director, Arnold Mao, and he's also the Chair of the Australian Auto Parts Manufacturing and Export Council. Many successes for the future, Arnold.
Thanks, Paul. All the best, and thank you for the opportunity.
And a big thank you to all of you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this Talktomotive Automotive Aftermarket Platform podcast. My name is Paul Marinelli. You can visit me at marinellipr.com.au or via my social channels on LinkedIn or Facebook.